It is no secret that every single Tuesday at 9 a.m., right after JM and the AM, we presented by Dr. David Hertzberg, who has been a very valuable recent addition to our cadre of staff and hosts. Rabbi Dr. David Hertzberg has brought us a series that now we call, or a show that now we call, Israel at 76. After all, just a couple of months ago, Israel celebrated its 76th birthday. And it's in that capacity that today, Rabbi Dr. David Hertzberg at 9 a.m. is going to begin a brand new series, which we'll discuss in a moment. Rabbi Dr. David Hertzberg is director of the Yeshiva of Flatbush, William S. Levine Family Shoah Institute. And again, for our purposes, he's the host of Israel at 76 Tuesdays right after JM in the AM. Rabbi Dr. David Hertzberg, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Thank you so much, Nachum. Hope you're having a good morning, and the fast is going well so far.
So far, so good. Unfortunately, there's still about another 13, 14 hours to go, but so far, so good. Rabbi Hertzberg, today you are starting at 9 a.m. a series on the Mossad. Now, the Mossad would best be translated as what? What title would you give the Mossad?
In English, people refer to it as the Institute. They call it the Institute when they're referring to it in English. But most people, when they're speaking, let's say, in intelligence circles, just say the Mossad.
And would the Mossad be the equivalent of the FBI, the CIA, or both?
So that's a really good point, because the Israeli system in terms of their intelligence services is a little bit different. So the Mossad is probably closest to the CIA. They're in charge of foreign intelligence and special operations or special assignments.
Now, I don't want to give away, all the material that you're going to be sharing with us during the Israel at 76 show, but just as a little bit of a background, does the Mossad exist in any way, shape, or form before the formation of the State of Israel, or it is an outgrowth of the formalization of actually forming a government and agencies once the State of Israel is born?
That's a really good question. And in fact, similar in a certain sense, that when the CIA is created in the late 1940s as an outgrowth of the OSS during World War II, there was a precedent to the Mossad. The Mossad doesn't actually come into existence officially to 1951, but there are certainly precedents to it, and during the time leading up to the Kum HaMdina in 1948, there are definitely intelligence services being done, but not exactly like the Mossad, and the Mossad puts that together and tries to professionalize it.
And again, I don't want to give out too much information, and you could be as vague as you wish, because people will be hearing all the details in a series, by the way, that's going to go for a while, right? This is a months-long series for us each and every week, right?
Right. It's going to, I see, at least to the duration of the summer, because we're going to be taking a look at some of the Mossad's major successes, some of its failures, looking into the fact that their failures aren't always failures in the long run, their successes aren't always successes in the long run. And we're also going to be emphasizing some life lessons from these episodes that we can incorporate into our own life. I don't mean in terms of spying, but some of the analytics that we're going to take a look at.
All right, so it's not months long, but it's certainly weeks long, the series, the Mossad on the Israel at 76 show. So it's funny, because I wanted to paint the Mossad's effectiveness in the following manner, but the truth is, based on what you just said, it would be impossible to do it this way. I was going to ask you that if the Mossad was a starting pitcher in the major leagues, would they have an overwhelming record of many more wins than losses? Would they be a 500 pitcher? Are there more losses than we think when we think of the Mossad? Because obviously when we think of the Mossad, we think of some of their major victories and some of the big news-making events. But based on what you just said, especially with that attitude of short-term success doesn't always mean long-term success and the opposite, it would be hard to give an actual record to the folks responsible for Mossad activities over the years.
Oh, that's a very powerful metaphor in terms of starting pitchers. So I would certainly say that, look, in the overall scheme of things, they've got a winning record. certainly in terms of the value that they bring to the state of Israel. The state of Israel could not exist without an agency like that. I definitely think that in the overall, for sure, the wins column is larger. However, I think also we need to look at it is that just like I would imagine with some baseball pitchers, the balance between wins and losses doesn't necessarily accurately indicate the true value that the pitcher might bring in terms of being a force multiplier and motivator. Right. So even if the, stopper, you know, if you say, look right. at it, yeah, so I would say that the value that the Mossad brings to the state of Israel would way outshine whether their win-loss column is closer on when you take a first look at it.
Right. And I assume there's no such thing when it comes to the Mossad as a perfect game, but there are probably some complete games, right?
There are definitely some complete games and some complete wins, some complete losses. I would definitely say that's actually one of the life lessons is there's no such thing as a perfect game. What did Mike Tyson say? No plan survives contact with the first punch.
Right.
You know, so, you know, you certainly see, and your most successful, I think, operatives are those that realize that, who are able to improvise on the spot and be flexible.
Wow. All right. I'm glad you played along and added on to our sports metaphor when it comes to the Mossad. I appreciate that very much. And all through the series that you're going to be doing, all through the different weeks that you're going to be discussing the Mossad, people will get a perspective on everything we just mentioned. In other words, nothing is as simple as it seems. It's always more complicated. And when it comes to looking back, as you said, sometimes you need a bit of a perspective of history and not just a perspective of the last few weeks or the last few months. By the way, speaking of the last few months, should we assume that the Mossad has been extremely involved in activities since October the 7th, or surprisingly not as much as we would think? Would a typical, and I know this is nothing typical, I get it, but would a war situation in Israel call for them to need more personnel, to be more involved with the government, etc., or not necessarily?
So, based on, again, what we call open source, the information, obviously, what we're able to see and glean from the papers, but just also having discussed this with some former intelligence people in my research. So I think absolutely, yes, as we see even in the paper that the head of the Mossad is involved in the negotiations, and there are reasons for that other than, you know, he might be a productive, successful, efficient negotiator. The Mossad, by dint of the fact that they're a secret organization, have these contacts already in the other countries. They have that interest. The one thing that be under the table that we don't know about, but they're there already. They exist. So those avenues are there. There are those roads and pathways are there to be used already. So when it comes to these types of negotiations, the Mossad has somewhat of an infrastructure and contacts to get it going. So that might be part of it. So I believe definitely the Mossad will be, you know, is playing a role and is going to be playing a bigger role. The question is, what type of a role did the Mossad have leading up to the October 7th failures, right, in the intelligence failures? And that's also one of the reasons I'm doing the episode now, because I read the report that came out a couple of weeks ago about the army released of the Erie. Right. And I was reading and I saw that there are a lot of terms and phrases there that if you don't understand the context of what those terms mean, you're not going to fully get what it's saying. So I'm also doing this unit now so that as more and more of these reports come out, people will be able to read them as you know, in a more informed manner.
Well, and yet another good reason for people to tune in. A lot of this, as you just indicated, is going to involve the news of the day. And yes, that report regarding Be'eri is something that made a major impression on everybody who read it. Finally, Rabbi Hertzberg, and again, I know it's not a simple answer, but is the Mossad of 1951 very different than the Mossad of 2024? Obviously, with, you know, the cyberspace and the cybersecurity and all of that, obviously it's got to be different just from a technical standpoint. But in terms of its leadership, how it operates, is it a very different organization than when it started?
Look, I think every organization grows. Its essential mission in its essential mission. I think they still keep to the essential mission, but in a lot of other ways, it's different. For example, you weren't even allowed to say until the mid-1960s to mention the word Mossad. It wasn't legal. And certainly you weren't allowed to say who was the head of the Mossad. If you remember watching the James Bond movies as kids, Even in England, the head of it was a C. You never were allowed to call the person by name.
Right.
Now we all know who the name is. So in those terms of those things, it certainly changed. But I think in terms of the underlying purpose and mission to keep the state of Israel safe, it's still the same.
Very cool. Well, we're looking forward to this. 9 o'clock today, everybody, just an hour from now, Rabbi Dr. David Hertzberg, who does Israel at 76 for us. It's an amazing show, has an amazing series entitled The Mossad, and it starts today. Make sure to be tuned in. And certainly it's available in the archive section, NahumSiegel.com, and of course on the NSN app. Rabbi Hertzberg, anything else you'd like to add, sir?
That we should all just have a meaningful fast and during our tefillot today, have the hostages in mind, all the wounded soldiers in mind, and that Hashem should listen to our prayers and answer them.
Amen to that. And today's a very meaningful day. Those of you who are who are educated in the calendar and know that that certain days certainly carry a certain amount of weight to it. This one, Shavuot Ratam, is the beginning of 3 weeks, is true national mourning. We have other days during the year where there are periods of mourning and customs of mourning, and we do and don't do things on certain days, etc. But now we literally enter a national period of mourning during these 3 weeks, and we hope, as Rabbi Hertzberg just said, that our prayers for the hostages, for the soldiers, for the IDF, for those who keep us safe around the world, and specifically in Israel, will carry even more meaning during this time. Rabbi Dr. David Hertzberg, you'll hear him an hour from now with Israel at 76 on the Nahum Siegel Network. This is America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listener-sponsored digital radio, around the world, the web at NahumSiegel.com on the Nahum Siegel Network, and of course on the beloved NSN app.